So it's been my contention from the very beginning of this series that we've been working through together for the last month or so, almost 2 months now. This is my main contention, that every human being in the world is looking for the satisfaction of their deepest cravings. But to summarize a lot of other stuff I talked about, let me just kind of show you where I'm ending up on this. We're looking for satisfaction, but the reality is we're not going to find it in relationships. We're not going to find that satisfaction in success in our career. We're not going to find it in pleasure that we may find here or there. We're not even going to find it in money. Where we're going to find this satisfaction is only in one place. And it's not a place, really, as much as it's a person. One person, all the satisfaction that we'll need for our deepest longings. And that person, of course, is Jesus. He is the treasure that we are looking for, whether we realize it or not. But the reality is that if we're going to enjoy that treasure, if we're going to enjoy Jesus, we've got to do something to get it. We've got to hunt for it. We've got to be intentional to make sure that you embrace and get the treasure that he is. So I've been working on what I'm calling a simple step-by-step beginner's guide to treasure hunting, or hunting for Jesus as your greatest treasure. We talked about, first of all, the first step is you need to investigate. You need to do the research, do some homework. You got to ask questions. You need to decide for yourself if Jesus is who he says he is, or if you're just not convinced. You need to figure that out for yourself. You can't rely upon anybody else to give you, spoon feed you, hand you that information. You got to figure it out for yourself so you can answer that question honestly. But once you move past the investigation step, you move into the second step we talked about last week, which is the step of loving Jesus. You've actually got to give Jesus your heart if this is going to work. If you want Jesus to satisfy the deepest longings in your heart, you have to open up your life. You got to grab his hand and jump into the deep end of the pool with him to either sink or swim, but with him. You got to open up to Jesus. You've got to listen to Jesus. You have to invite him in so that he can love you and make his home with you. Now, our test case for step number two last week was a guy by the name of Simon, but he's more commonly known today as Peter. Peter was a very close friend of Jesus, and I'm not going to tell the story all over again, but at a point in his life, he failed Jesus miserably. And last week we looked at the time after Jesus came back from the dead when he pursued Peter, didn't want to let him run away from him, and asked him a devastating question. And here's the devastating question. It should be up on the screen here. He, that's Jesus, said to him, that's Peter, the third time. So this is a conversation that's been happening for a few minutes now. He said, Simon, son of John, do you what? Love me. That's the devastating question. How do I know it was devastating for Peter? Well, the text tells us Peter was grieved because Jesus said to him the third time, do you love me? And here's what Peter said back to Jesus. Lord, you know how much? Everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. But then he continues on. Truly, truly, Jesus says to Peter, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. Does that seem a little strange? And I think John, who's writing this down, understands that for most people who didn't like hang out with Jesus every day, they would probably be thrown off a little bit by that statement, right? Because he just said, do you love me? Okay, feed my sheep. Now, when you were a kid, you used to dress yourself. Okay, and it's like, all right, Jesus, where are you going with this? Well, here's where Jesus is going with this. And John is going to fill in the blanks for those of us that weren't there. Look at this. This he said to show by what kind of death Peter was going to glorify God. And after saying this, Jesus said to Peter, what? Follow me. See, this question was devastating for Peter. Do you love me? It pierced his heart, and in the end, Peter affirmed his love for Jesus. Remember, you know everything, Jesus. You know that I love you. And Jesus didn't look at Peter and go, no, you don't. I know you don't. He didn't do it. He accepted what Peter said. He did know everything, and he did know that Peter loved him. But he also knew that there was an additional step that Peter was going to have to take if Peter was going to follow through on what he said. And that step is the last two words on the screen, and what does it say? Follow me. You see, love is an easy thing to claim, isn't it? It doesn't take you, cost you anything to say, oh, no, I love you. That's easy. You know what's not as easy, but still pretty easy? To come to feel love for somebody. That's maybe a little harder, but they're still within the realm of possibility. But do you know what's really, really costly when it comes to love? Proving it. Proving it to the person you're saying it to. Because you can only prove love with costly, concrete actions that you choose to do. So Jesus is doing something here with Peter. He says, yes, Peter, step two is love me. I'm going to accept that what you say is true. You really do love me. But okay, Peter, there's another step, buddy. You got to show up. You got to prove to me what you're saying. If you say you love me, then you can prove it to me very simply. Not easily, but simply. If you follow me. Now, when Peter heard those two words, and it's really just one word in Greek, when he heard that single word spoken to him, I guarantee you, Peter knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. He knew exactly what Peter meant. The reality is, he had already been following Jesus for 3 years. He had watched Jesus. He had heard all about this follow me thing. He had seen it in action. But here's the deal. I'm not certain that we understand what it means. I'm not sure we really grasp that. I think over the years, we've lost the simple clarity that Peter had when he heard those words, to the point that if I just said to you guys, okay, step number three in making Jesus your treasure, follow Jesus. Now, go do it. I have a feeling some of us might walk out of here inspired, right? Oh, yes, I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to sing the songs we sang. I'm going to sing them as I walk out. I'm following Jesus. Or maybe we'll feel guilty as we walk out. Oh, follow Jesus. I don't know. I've already blown it before. Can I do it again? But whether you're inspired or guilty, I'm afraid we'd walk out of here confused about what it exactly Jesus wants us to do. So what we got to do this morning is we got to figure this out. We got to figure out, what did Jesus mean when he said to Peter those two simple words at the end, follow me? And in order to explain that in more detail, we've got to go back in time in the story. Back to the gospel, the story, the book of Luke chapter 9. And I invite you to take your copy of the Bible and open it up. I love it when people have their nose in the text for themselves, reading it to make sure you don't have to just trust some preacher on a stage that I'm telling it to you the right way. Luke chapter 9. If you need a copy of the Bible, there should be extras in the seats in front of you. Just grab one of those, and I'm going to give you a cheat code today. The cheat code is, it's on page 867. You can go straight there. The rest of us that aren't using those are going to have to fumble and find it, but you, if you're grabbing one of the seat Bibles, go right to page 867, and I'm just going to read one or two verses for you. Okay? It starts in Luke chapter 9, that's the ninth chapter, and the 21st verse. On page 867. Verse 21 says this, and he, and again, we're jumping into the middle, this is Jesus here, Jesus strictly charged and commanded them, that's his disciples, to tell this to no one, saying, the Son of Man must, what? Ooh, this is a great message already. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be what? Rejected. So, Jesus is really piling on the positive, warm, fuzzy feeling things here, right? He's got to suffer, be rejected, and then to add the worst to it, be rejected, it says, by the elders and chief priests and scribes, and then what is the culmination? Be what? Killed. So let's recap, Jesus. You, Jesus, are going to suffer, be rejected, and killed. Now, there's some good news here. Look at the last phrase. On the third day, be raised. But I don't know about you, if I'm the disciples, all I heard were the first three things. So you're going to go and suffer, you're going to be rejected, and you're going to be killed. They've sort of been banking on the fact that everybody's going to love this Jesus guy and want to jump on board. They kind of thought that everybody, he was going to win them over. And what Jesus is warning them is, hey, whoa, I'm going to Jerusalem now, and I'm going to draw a lot of attention, but it's not going to go the way you think. I'm going to suffer, I'm going to be rejected, and I'm going to die. 3 days later, I'm coming back, but it's not going to be an easy path to get there. And then he says in verse 23, and he said to how many people? All, everybody who's listening. It's probably the 12, there's probably people on the fringes, there may even be a crowd of people that are still not even sure who this Jesus guy really is, but he says to everyone. So I think it's pretty safe for us today as we're looking and asking, is this relate to me? I got something to tell you. This message is for you if you meet the criteria of verse 23. He said to all, if anyone would come after me. Suppose you get it in your mind, Jesus says, that you want to follow me, then here's what you need to do. Take a look. If anyone would come after me, let him what? Deny himself. We're off to a great start, right? That's a great start for a recruitment pitch. Deny yourself. Okay, that's great. Deny yourself, take up his cross. Boy, Jesus is going to have to beat off the followers with a stick. I mean, he's offering them a cross? Are you kidding me? Not as jewelry, not as a cute decoration, not to express your faith, as an instrument of torture and death. Okay? You want to follow me? I got two things for you. Deny yourself, and I want you to pick up an instrument of torture and death. And then the next word just drives me crazy. How often? Daily. This is something you've got to do every single day. It's not just I have a good day and I follow Jesus today, so now I get to take the rest of my life off. No, this is a daily process. And then he says, and follow me. And then just to make sure that everybody feels excited about this, he gives them a paradox. Verse 24, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. Thank you, Jesus, for clearing that up, right? That's super easy to understand and super fun. Oh my word, you mean in order to save my life, all I got to do is lose it? If I try to hold on to my life, I'm going to lose it anyway. Wow, Jesus, what are you getting at here? See, one of the things about Jesus that whatever you think about Jesus, and you may not be 100% convinced about him, and that's fine. But I'll tell you one thing about Jesus. He was always honest with his followers about two things. He was always honest with them about where he was headed. He wasn't headed to some gold throne with all these wonderful, exciting things and everybody bowing at his feet, at least not yet. He told them from the beginning, I'm going to die. I'm going to be rejected and killed. So he was honest about that, and he was also incredibly honest with anybody who was interested in following him about where they were headed to if they decided to follow him. So let's look back at these verses, and I'm going to just break it down into three pieces, okay? Three pieces of what it means in this passage to follow Jesus. And it's going to be so much fun. Okay, not a lot of fun, but we're going to get through this. Notice firstly, Jesus says in verse 23, if anyone would come after me, let him what? Deny himself or deny yourself. Now, I'll be honest with you, that sounds like a puzzle. That sounds like when you don't really want to tell your kids something, so you sort of tell them like this other thing that really doesn't really explain what you mean. That's sort of how I feel when I read this. Deny yourself? What do you mean, deny yourself? How can you deny yourself? Well, the funny thing that's interesting, this word deny, it's very ironic, okay? Because that is the exact same word that John uses later to describe Peter denying Jesus, which is what led us to come back to this passage in the first place. The same Greek word is being used. When Jesus was being arrested and taken off to jail, Peter denied Jesus. Now, how did he deny Jesus? Well, simple, right? Peter was questioned, hey, weren't you with that Jesus guy and the Galilee teacher? And he was like, I don't know him. He didn't want to be associated with Jesus. I don't want you to think of me when you think of Jesus. Jesus is over there. I'm over here. I want nothing to do with that guy. That guy over there, he's on his own, buddy. If he's in trouble, he's going to have to pay the consequences. I'm over here. I'm distant. I'm safe. It's a way of disowning somebody. Now, Jesus is basically saying to anyone who wants to follow him, if you want to start this journey, then you've got to actually disown yourself. You've got to renounce yourself. You have to distance yourself from yourself. And this is where it gets a little bit vague, okay? But let me try to break it down into a statement that I think goes in your notes, if you're following along in your notes, that I hope will make more sense. I think what it means is this. To deny yourself means this. Number one, to abandon your agenda for your own life. You get that? Abandon, not yourself in the sense of, oh, nothing, doesn't, who cares what happens to me? No, no, no. It means to abandon your agenda for your own life. Now, when I say agenda, what do I mean? Let me back up. We are all born, and there's a few doctors in the room that can testify to this, probably. We are all born with an inner instinct to take care of ourselves, right? To make ourselves happy. We literally come out of the womb with this instinct. A lot of people call it the survival instinct. So babies are hungry, what do? They scream and cry and fight and do everything they need to do to get somebody's attention to give them what they need. It's an instinct we all have to take care of ourselves to survive. As we get older, we become really sophisticated about this need to survive. And we come up with plans to make sure I survive. Plans to get people to like us, to get people to give us what we want or what we need. As we get older, it's really interesting. Maybe we decide, I'm going to get good grades. As I get good grades in school, my parents will like me and my parents will provide for me. I'm going to be funny. And when I'm funny, that's how people are going to like me and provide for me what I need. Oh, I'm going to be pretty. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus all my attention, all my time on looking a certain way because I know that then people will give me what I need. Or maybe you're going to be, I'm going to be super helpful. I'm going to help everybody. And when I help everybody, when I need them, they'll come through for me. Either way, these plans we make, either to accumulate pleasure or money or success, a good reputation, build a career, all of these plans represent a strategy, and I'm calling these strategy points our agenda. And here's the way it works. If in our heads, and we don't say this out loud, but this is what's working behind the scenes. If everything goes according to my plan, then I'll have everything I need. If people come through and do what I need them to do for me, then I'll be fine. I'll have everything I need. It's logical. It just makes sense. I come into the world saying, I have all these needs. It only makes sense you come up with a plan for how you're going to make those needs be satisfied. You with me so far? Am I over your head? I'm good? Okay. Sometimes I worry because I talk too much anyway. Well, here's what Jesus does, okay? He steps into a logical, normal human way of handling existence, which is, I have a need, I'm going to make sure I get what I need. And Jesus says, I want you to abandon all your plans for how you're going to take care of yourself. I want you to completely let go of your own agenda. However it is that you plan to take care of yourself, I want you to let that go. And here's what I want you to do instead. I want you to really think and really believe that I am the only one who can satisfy you. Me. Not your plans, not your goodness, not your skills, not your humor, but me. I'm the one that's going to take care of you. You can't rely on your intellect. You can't rely upon your money, your wit, your humor, your good looks, your family relationships. You need to rely, Jesus says, on me instead. Whatever your plans are, you've got to disown them. Deny yourselves. Now, a lot of times this is hard for us because we see Jesus as someone who can give me the things that I want and need. We approach Jesus, it's kind of like we have our plans that we build without Jesus, and then when we meet Jesus, we go, he's got a lot of power. He could help me with my plans. And we take our plans that we've built over a lifetime, and we take them to Jesus. Hey, Jesus, you love me, right? Yes, I do. I died for you. Okay, great. You love me. Help me with my plan. Help me fulfill my agenda. Please make me what I've always wanted to be. And Jesus says, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. See, Jesus is not an ATM machine that you just punch the right code into and the cash comes out to give you what you want. He is the treasure. He doesn't have the treasure hidden away that he can give you or not give you. He himself is the treasure that we need. And if we want to get him, then we've got to leave our agendas at the door. We don't come to Jesus with our agendas and say, Jesus, help me accomplish my plans. We come to Jesus and say, Jesus, my plans are horrible. What is your plan? How do you think you can take care of me? How do you help me with my family situation I don't know how to handle? How do you help me with my financial situation I don't know how to handle? How do you want me to handle my career that I don't know how to handle? Jesus, I have plans. My plans are horrible. I'm leaving them here. I need to know your plans because you're the treasure. You're not going to give me the treasure. You are the treasure. I love it that this theme is not just something that's in like one place and it's kind of like obscure. This is a major theme throughout the entire New Testament. The Apostle Paul was one of the early leaders in the church. He kind of picked up on a lot of the stuff Jesus taught, and then he kind of gave a little bit more detail. This is how he said it in Galatians chapter 2. Look on the screen behind you. Behind me, not you. Here we go. There it is. I have been what? Crucified with Christ. Does that sound like take up your cross? It should, because I think Paul is developing the same idea. He says, I have been crucified with Christ. So what does that mean? It is no longer who lives. I, me. It's not me. It's not my life anymore. It's now Christ who lives in me. In other words, my life doesn't belong to me anymore. It's not about my plans. It's not about my goals. It's not about my dreams. Your dreams are done. Done. They're gone. It's over. Your life no longer is your possession. Because that's the way we think. This life belongs to me. And Jesus, I'll give you a little piece. And mom and dad, I'll give you a little piece. And spouse and kids, I'll give you a piece. And career. And we have our life that we divvy out to whoever we think deserves it. Jesus says, I'm sorry, it's not even your life anymore. That's what follow me means. It means give me your life. And in return, Jesus promises, I will be the treasure you need in your moments of need. See, Jesus is not just inviting people to go to church, be a nice person, give to charities and make sure you get your tax deductible receipt. He's calling us to let our agenda, our best laid plans, to die. But I gotta keep moving here because following Jesus does not end in death, okay? That's where we start. There's more. Look at the second piece. We're back in Luke 9, right? So Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, number one, let him what? Deny himself. And then he says this, take up his cross daily and follow me. Now, in order to try to help you understand this, I'm going to take a little bit of a risk here, and I'm going to use an illustration. Would you guys allow me to do that? All right, whether you are or not, I'm going to do it. So here we go. Okay, let me start with this. This, believe it or not, is my iPod. This contains, believe it or not, about 300 songs that I listen to when I desperately need some inspiration when I'm at the gym trying not to kill myself on the treadmill. I need something to keep me moving, and this little device here helps me. Now, here's a little problem. Even though, and some of you have already started to think about this, but you have 300 songs, Toby, what's the problem? I sometimes get tired of the 300 songs I have on here. And sometimes when I am trying to survive that extra tenth of a mile, I need something new and exciting and fun and whatever. So here's the problem, though. My iPod, maybe it's from the Stone Ages. Some of you may have different iPods, but I cannot get any new music onto this device. This device cannot connect to the internet. It is a little tiny piece of hardware that only can do what I've programmed it to do. And so far, I've only programmed it to listen to the 250, 300 songs that are on here. Now, if my budget will allow, and that's a huge if, okay, I can sometimes get new music, but I can't get it from here. So if I'm counting for satisfaction on this little device, I am going to run out of satisfaction. I just get bored, okay? I'm like sad and pathetic maybe, but I get bored. Now, if my budget will allow, though, I can connect to the internet and get some new music. And I use this device to do it. This device is my laptop computer. Now, this is not a closed system. This can connect to the internet, and I can find music on there and download it onto here. Here's the problem. If I take my headphones and plug them into my laptop, it's really hard to do this. Okay? I suppose I could, if I wanted to draw attention to the fact that I'm really horrible at running, I could just, you know. But I'd rather not. I'd rather keep my lack of wisdom and stuff under wraps. I don't want as many people to know about that. So what do? I download the songs onto this computer, and then there's this amazing little device right here. This device will take, what did I do with my, did it fall on the floor? Under the table? Actually, I've already stepped on it before. Doesn't matter. I take my iPod, and I can plug it into here. And when I plug it into here, this amazing thing starts to happen. My laptop instantly knows that I've plugged this in. And it does this amazing thing. It reads this device and it realizes this device doesn't have all the songs that this device has. And so a little box will pop up on my screen and it says, do you want to sync the laptop with the iPod? In other words, do you want the songs on your iPod to be the exact same songs that are on here? And because I'm bored with my original music, what do I say? Yes, I would like you to synchronize yourself with this iPod. I push that little button, and all of a sudden, it automatically copies any new music on here onto my iPod, and I can go to the gym, and I can not die. Syncing up, synchronizing. Now, this is a concept that Paul and Peter and Jesus are, I think, are trying to get at with this whole take up your cross thing and follow me. The iPod now, once I unplug it, is a complete copy of everything that's on here music-wise. Okay? This is almost like a teeny tiny little laptop that I carry with me to listen to all the music that I want to listen to. So, back to Luke 9:23. Jesus says this to his followers, hey, I want you to take up your cross daily and follow me. Now, when Jesus says, take up your cross, did he already know that he was headed towards the cross? Yeah, in fact, he just told us the verse before, I'm going to suffer, be rejected, and be killed. So when he says, take up my cross, or take up your cross, he's calling people to do what he did. They're going to have to sync up with Jesus and do the things that Jesus did. What I think following Jesus means is it means joining him. It means connecting to him. Just like my iPod has to connect to my computer to get the music I want on it, we have to connect with Jesus. And as we connect with him and unite with him, and we even think of his death as our death, ultimately his new life will be our new life. As we unite with Jesus and plug in, so to speak, do you know what's the crazy thing that happens when you plug into Jesus? He starts to reshape your life so that you are exactly like him. Look at how Paul says it in Romans chapter 8, verse 29. He says, "For those whom he," that's God, "foreknew, he also predestined to be" what? "Conformed to the image of his son." In other words, God has a plan, and it's the plan that when you sync up with Jesus, he's going to start to replicate his character in you. He's going to be and show you how to live your life through him. Look at again at Galatians chapter 2. Paul said this, remember? "I have been crucified with Christ." Remember that? He says, "It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me." Right? He's saying, look, my life is over. My agenda is done. But now I've synced up with Jesus, and now his character, his agenda, his life is what I'm all about. I am here not to live for my own agenda. I am here to live for his agenda. You could even say it this way. The old Toby, with all of his little plans to take care of himself, that Toby is now dead. He died when Jesus died. I have been crucified with Jesus. And now Toby is synced up with Jesus. And I am linked to him. And my life, Toby's life, as I used to know it before Jesus, that life is over. And what's actually happening is that everything I do from here on out is Jesus living his life through my body. That means that Jesus' dreams are my dreams. That means that Jesus' priorities are my priorities. That means Jesus' desires are now my desires. Jesus' burdens, the things that made him cry, are the things that burden me and make me cry. Jesus' agenda is now my agenda. Look at the way Paul finishes this sentence, though. He says this, "And the life I now live in the body." In other words, it's not like I commit suicide and die. I'm still physically alive. "But the life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." See, whatever life I have left, Paul is saying, I want my life to be about Jesus' life. I want to be about doing what Jesus would do if he were here right now. When I go to work, I want to talk the way Jesus talked. When I'm with my family and friends, I want to love as Jesus loved. When I'm at my career and I'm really sweating, doing my best, I want to work as Jesus would have worked. And I want to think as Jesus thought. Why? Because my end game is this. I want to become a miniature teeny tiny version. I want to become a little teeny tiny version of Jesus. I want the world, because I can take this with me anywhere. I can go out to the marketplace. I can go out to my work. I can go anywhere with this. And so Jesus, in his brilliance, decides to replicate himself in us so that he could spread out through the world and we could take his love in places where if he were here one person at a time, he couldn't do it in enough time. But he duplicates himself in us. And now we get to be living, breathing embodiments of Jesus to our world. Friends, that is what it means to follow Jesus. Number one, we deny ourselves and we let our agendas die. We kill them if we have to. Then we sync up with Jesus. We live his life in our body. That means we chase his agenda and his priorities with all the strength that he provides. Following Jesus doesn't just mean you buy a cool t-shirt and put it on and say, "Jesus is cool, man." Following Jesus means letting him replicate his life in my life and then live his life through me. Now, for those of you that are worried, that means now that Jesus is never going to let you have any rest. Jesus is never going to let you have any fun. Jesus is never going to take care of you. I got to tell you something. There is nobody more in tune with what you need than the person who made you. And your designer is going to design rest into your life when you let him be in control of it. He's going to design fun into your life when you let him be in control of it. When you're not the one coming to God saying, God, this is what I demand. And you come to him and say, God, I have nothing to demand. What do you want? You're going to find that God is the very best person to take care of you. And you're going to find it's the life you've always wanted to have. So, let's go back to John 21. John 21. I think I got it on the screen here, guys, don't I? I do. Back up on the screen. If you want to look at it in your text, that's fine, but I've got it up here too. Let's go back to these verses we read before, right? He said to him the third time, Jesus said to Peter the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. And then remember we get to that weird verse, the verse that doesn't seem to make sense. When you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. Not my kids, but whatever. They got to dress what I give them. Anyway. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. And then John clears it up for those of us who have no idea what Jesus is talking about by saying, this he said to show by what kind of what? Death Peter was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. All right, so what's the third piece? I see a third piece here. The first piece, let me just recap. The first piece is to abandon your agenda for your own life. The second piece is to sync up with Jesus and his agenda for your life. And the third piece is this. Following Jesus is a lifelong journey. Following Jesus is a lifelong journey. Jesus is telling Peter in this statement, hey, Peter, you are going to follow me your entire life from here to the end of your life. And then he says, at the end, at some point when you are old, Peter, you are going to follow Jesus to your death. And that death is going to bring glory to God. It's not a temporary thing. It's not you going through some kind of a Jesus phase when you're in your 30s, when you have kids and you're scared because you're going to mess up their lives if you don't come back to God. And then you kind of get out of the Jesus phase in your 40s and 50s and settle this nice, comfortable life where Jesus is a nice little acquaintance you welcome in maybe once every now and then. That's not what following Jesus is. Following is a lifelong commitment. You see, a follower of Jesus lives his life for Jesus, and then when it's time to die, a follower of Jesus makes sure that they die in a way that brings glory to God. I'm not talking just about martyrdom here, okay? For Peter, it meant martyrdom. He was killed for his faith in a violent way. I'm not talking always about that. God may ask some of us in this room to do that, to die in that way to glorify him. But you know what I've also seen? I've seen people age, and I've seen people enter into the arms of death with grace, with humility, with trust. I've seen them close their eyes in this life, confident that they would wake up with Jesus. I've seen people who have closed their eyes in this life with hope and sharing that hope with the people around their bed so that they're kind of almost worried more about you than you're worried about them. And let me tell you something, that kind of a death glorifies God. You don't get to pick how you die, but you certainly can pick whether or not your death brings glory to God or not. Followers realize that in a sense, it's not really a choice for us. Followers live their lives until God decides it's time for that life to end. And then they try to make sure that whatever end that is, that end brings glory to God. The Apostle Paul elaborated on this by saying it like this. He said, if we live, we live to the Lord. I am not eager to die. Can I just tell you that? I'm not eager to end this life. I've got a lot of stuff I'd still like to accomplish. I've got babies I'd like to see grow up. I'd like a lot of things to happen in my life still. I'm not ready. I don't feel like I'm ready. And obviously I'm still here, so God doesn't think I'm ready. But if I live, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to live to the Lord. That's what a follower does. A follower doesn't live for himself. A follower doesn't live to advance his career, advance his plans, build his little tiny kingdoms, sad, pathetic little kingdoms that'll just pass on to whoever takes over after you die. No, I'm not going to live for that. I'm going to live to the Lord. But you know what? If I die, if we die, Paul says, we die to the Lord. Even our deaths are intended to point to him, to show the world how amazing he is. These people aren't just willing to live for him. These people are willing to what? Die for him. And that speaks to his glory and his majesty and how amazing he must be if humans are willing to sacrifice even their own lives to honor and obey him. And then Paul just sums it up like this. I love this. This is typical Paul, just laying it right out there. So then whether we live or whether we die, we are whose? The Lord's. That's what it means to be a follower. You no longer belong to you. You belong to one person, and that's the treasure of your life, Jesus Christ. And then he said it like this in Romans 14. He says, for to this end, Christ died and lived again, that he might become Lord, both of who? The dead and of the living. In other words, Jesus is in charge. That's what it means. When he says, follow me, take up your cross and follow me, he's saying, I'm going in this direction, and I want you, if you're going to follow me, you're going to come in this direction with me, and you're going to be listening for whatever words come out of my mouth. And whatever words come out of my mouth, that's what you're going to do. And you're going to follow me until the end of your life, and when your life is done, you're going to die in a way that brings glory to God. See, friends, here's the amazing thing. I don't know about you, but when I look ahead to the end of my life, which I hope is in about 80 or 90 years from now, I want to give Abraham a run for his money on how long he lived. But anyway, when I get to my point of death, I sometimes am afraid of aging and I'm afraid of dying because it seems like there's nothing left for me to do. There's no hope. Like, what can I accomplish? You know, what sermons can I preach from my deathbed? Are you kidding me? Maybe you visited somebody's deathbed and you got taught the most amazing sermon you've ever heard or seen in your entire life. Somebody who knows their time is short, somebody who's not eager to go, but somebody who knows I am in good hands. You don't have to worry about me, I'm fine. And you walk away and you go, how can you have that much faith? Friends, your dying matters as much as your living. And when we die, we can see that as yet another challenge to grab onto and say, I don't know how I'm going to do this. This is scary. I've never experienced this before, but I don't want to just live for Jesus. Whatever death he asks me to die, I am willing to do it in glory and honor to him. Anyway, it's a lifelong journey. It includes your life, and it will include one day your death. If you choose to follow, that's what you're signing up for. That's what he expects of us. So, can you understand why I have kind of a tough job? Now, don't feel sorry for me, but think about it. See, my job and your job, if you decide to follow too, is you've got to somehow convince people to embrace a paradox. You know what that paradox is? That the only way to experience true satisfaction of your deepest longings is if you abandon all your plans to satisfy your deepest longings. You see what I'm saying? I mean, that's not an easy sell, right? You got to try to convince people that your job now is to sync up to and become exactly like a man who died a horrible death to bring glory to God and bring about the happy ending God intended for the whole world. Just like Jesus said, if you save your life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life for my sake, you'll find it. See, my job is to convince people that the only way to truly live is to choose to die to yourself and let Jesus live his life through you. And I'll be real, it's a tough sell. You know why? Because our culture is screaming into whatever opening you will point towards it, that is the exact opposite of how you're supposed to live. Living is about finding all the joy and the pleasure and suck the marrow out of life, and that's what you get. Because there's nothing coming afterwards, there's nothing you're saving up for, so use your life while you can. Sometimes that turns into wanton debauchery and just going after pleasure. Other times it's be the best kind of person you can be because you don't have a lot of time left. But either way, the world is trying to scream in your ear that the best way to keep your life is to keep it. It's to save it. It's to protect it. It's to hide it from the world, hide it from God. Don't ever give away your life. And Jesus says the exact opposite. He says, give it away. Let your agendas die. And then come to me and do what I ask. Find me to be that treasure that you really need. And here's the mystery, guys, and I'll tell you this. I'm not telling you this as somebody who's been doing it for a long time and is an expert in it. I'm telling you as somebody who has gotten a tiny little taste of what is to come. When you investigate Jesus, when you love him and give your heart to him, and then when you make this fateful choice to follow him as he describes in his word, you start to experience things you had never experienced before. Now, you're just gonna have to believe me on this. And I'll be real, there's days I don't experience it and days that I do, depending on how well I am doing the following thing. But I found when I follow Jesus and I let my life die and I come to him and say, Jesus, live your life in me, I experience peace. Because all of a sudden, it's not up to me whether or not my life is going to work. It's not frantically figuring out my plans. Nothing stresses me out more than frantically coming up with a plan and a strategy. Because he says to me, he's like, Toby, live as I ask you to live, and no matter what happens, I'll be there. I'll be there in life, I'll be there in suffering, I'll be there in death. You can never be lost, Toby. You will never be alone. I'm with you, so live my life in you. You start to experience peace. And then you start to experience love. Because all of a sudden, these statements that says, who loved me and gave himself for me, you realize you have been loved before you even knew that you needed love. And you've been loved better than anybody has ever been able to love you and will ever be able to love you. And in those moments of quiet, you all of a sudden realize there is a God and I am already loved. What? I'm loved before I perform all my tasks, before I do my good deeds, before I become what I'm supposed to become. I'm loved when I was at my worst. Are you kidding me? That experience of love does something to a person. It changes you. It rocks you to the very core. And you start to experience joy. Because you know your life means something. It matters. You matter right now, and you're always going to matter forever. Your life has purpose, and there are things you can celebrate in this life. And all of a sudden, things that I've been fighting and desperately searching for in the world, peace, love, joy, I find I get them as this side product, this gift that I didn't expect because I decided I'm going to let my life go. And you know what? There's times when I suffer, there's times when I hurt, there's times like Peter and like everybody else that I fail. And I want to give up just like Peter wanted to give up, and he went back to his fishing. We talked about it last week. But you know what happens to me? The same thing that happens to Peter. My treasure comes looking for me. He pursues me. He tracks me down. And he cooks me breakfast. And sometimes he asks me devastating questions about my heart. And then he breaks through all the garbage and I come back to him as my treasure, the one who loved me and gave himself for me. And I find myself strangely satisfied. I have enough to keep going. I have enough to keep pursuing it. And I also have something else. I have hope inside of me of satisfaction that will never be taken away from me one day in eternity. And that hope causes my steps to pick up. And I keep walking. And I get to where he sends me. Until it's time for my life to end. And then I get to go to be in the presence of the person who has gotten me along this path. Yeah, it's a paradox, and it doesn't make a lot of sense when you first look at it. But if you take the leap, and you follow, and you say, I'm leaving my life at the door, and I'm embracing your life. You do what you want in my life. When you do that, you start to find God to be there for you and provide for you in a way you never, ever thought possible. So some of you have already tasted a little bit of that yourself. Can I just encourage you? Keep going. Keep walking. Keep chasing Jesus like that. And if you're here and you've never experienced that and you're like, I don't know, I've been around this church thing for a while, but this following thing you're talking about, I'm not sure I'm all up for that. Can I just challenge you? Can I challenge you? Oh, can I challenge you to try? Can I challenge you to take a leap? Can I challenge you to give it everything you are and see what God can do with you? Let's pray. God, It is an awe-inspiring call that you offer to us this morning to follow you, because we know what it implies. We know what it'll cost us. We know what we'll have to do in response now. I hope it's been clear enough that we have an idea of what it actually is going to look like. And it's hard, God. It's hard to take your hands off the wheel of your own life and let somebody else drive. Oh, it's so hard. I pray, God, for every heart in this room. I am certain, as certain as I am standing here, I am certain that there are some people right now that are just wrestling internally, and they are just in a lot of turmoil right now. They feel the pressure of, do I follow, do I not follow? Do I stay where I've been? Do I take a leap into the deep water with Jesus? They're wrestling and they're struggling. God, I want to pray that they would not cease to struggle until they lay their hand in your hand. And God, help them to know that as they walk this journey, we're all here to walk it with them and help them. And I pray, God, that you would just help us to do what we need to do to make your son Jesus our true treasure. Help us to investigate him. Help us to love him and love him more deeply each day. And then, Father, help us to follow him wherever he leads. And I pray these things in his name. Amen.